Hello and welcome to the Digital Insight, the technology, procurement and supply chain podcast that delivers valuable C-level perspective into the core issues surrounding business transformation and digital disruption. Each episode will bring you the most inspiring executive insights from those who are leading transformation strategies within the world's biggest and best known companies. The Digital Insight, disrupt, transform, evolve.
Welcome to the Digital Insight, the official podcast series for CPO Strategy and Interface magazines. Today we're joined by Dave Ingram, Chief Procurement Officer at Unilever, who is going to be outlining how the multi-conglomerate is helping to build and shape a more equitable and inclusive society.
Yeah, well, let me start, if you could maybe introduce yourself and talk a little bit about your role at Unilever, and then we can obviously address some of the exciting new ventures going on there.
Sure. So my name is Dave Ingram. I'm the Chief Procurement Officer for Unilever, which gives me the pleasure of buying essentially everything that goes into our raw materials, all our packaging, everything to do with our distribution of those materials, but also everything to do with the media, information technology, infrastructure of our business. So our marketing, what we call our marketing and business services, procurement as well. And I'm based here in Singapore for the last couple of years.
Okay. Obviously, we spoke last autumn with regard to Unilever's moves within sort of sustainability and how procurement was playing a massive role in that. And what we're going to be talking about today kind of chimes in with that a little bit, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. I mean, we strongly believe that there's two large issues facing the world right now. One is the climate change issue, and the other one is the social inequality that we see around the world. So tomorrow we're going to be announcing a suite of measures we think are fundamental to help bring back equality and inclusion of different groups of people, prepare people for a different future of work, both internally and externally, and at the core help to raise living standards for people who are involved in our ecosystem.
And what would you say was the impetus behind that, if you like?
Look, I think if any of us look outside what's happening in the world and what's accelerated in the world during COVID, we, I think, had something like 650 million people in poverty before COVID. And for the first time in 10 years, the number has gone up. And 37 more million people last year are living in poverty. We see people's reliance on food systems and free meals, people's loss of work, and a different working environment of the future, and different skills required of the future. And also an inequality in people's access to opportunity. So a range of those things I think we're all seeing. And as a business, you know, it's fundamental to us to, in our purpose, make sustainable living commonplace. And that is about creating a world which is more sustainable for us to continue as a business. It's not a result of what we do. It's the driving factor of what we do.
I mean, obviously, you're a chief procurement officer, so you get to see, you know, you occupy quite a special place within Unilever, don't you, in terms of, I guess, helping to form initiatives of this kind?
Yeah, look, I feel honoured and privileged to be in the position where, you know, we work with a wide range of suppliers. We have 65,000 suppliers, give or take, in our supply base. We have many millions of people whose livelihood is directly connected to us as a business. And if you think about that as a household livelihood, then even more millions of people connected to that. We're also, you know, we talked about this last year, We have to furnish our business with agricultural crops. We deal with 2 to 3 million hectares of land around the world. So within our role in procurement, where we're procuring and we have the choice of procurement, we can choose from people who are on the same agenda as us, where they've got similar mission in terms of being sustainable, making sure that their operations are sustainable. And that gives us an incredible accountability and responsibility to do the right things and how we choose who we partner with.
And obviously, you just mentioned their partnerships. I mean, that's obviously fundamental to procurement and supply chain, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. In fact, we launched our new, what we call our Partnership with Purpose program in December of last year, actually. And we were very keen to do that because we wanted to reset what partnership means for us, really along the lines of the partners that we will increasingly veer towards and move our spend towards are partners who have the same purpose-led business, the same business-led around climate solutions and the transformation we are trying to do in our business with respect to changing from fossil-based to renewable bases, more towards a plant-based diet. So companies who can facilitate that with us, we will enhance in our portfolio and we will move our spend towards them. But also importantly, tomorrow is about adding this other arm of social work and getting partnerships to understand our journey, the journey we want to go on, and engage them in that change. We're very clear, Andrew, in both the climate and the nature that Unilever alone will make a difference. But if we can get Unilever and 65,000 partners and a bigger ecosystem of peer groups and governments and NGOs, then we can really make, firstly, a more systemic change and therefore most likely a more sustainable change and certainly a wider impact of change across our business and across many other businesses in the world. So that partnership program is really critical. And we've committed to giving more openness, more insight to our strategies, more openness of our R&D, more co-working with our research and development colleagues, having good access to not just the large typical supply base that we might have historically worked with, but also the new, more nascent companies who actually are bringing fantastic insight, fantastic thought, but maybe not necessarily normally on our radar because of a scale. And we've committed to finding mechanisms to engage and bring them also into our ecosystem. And I'll talk a bit later, most likely, about the extension when I'm making around diverse suppliers to do the same for even another layer of inclusion within our supply base.
I mean, obviously, you talked a little bit there about the scale, which obviously Unilever is absolutely enormous. What's embedding this initiative, if you like? What are some of the actual policies that you're introducing, and how are they going to work on a grand level, if you like?
So it's split across three areas. It's brought a desire to raise living standards across our value chain, number one. Number two, to creating opportunities through inclusivity with a wider group of people. And three, preparing people for future work, both internally and externally. Now, the main commitments within those are ensuring that everyone who directly provides goods or services to Unilever earns at least a living wage by 2030. Secondly, it's making sure that we redirect spend, $2 billion of our spend, towards suppliers owned and managed by people in underrepresented groups, in more diverse groups, and we'll do that by 2025. And lastly, the key commitment within future of work is to pioneer new employment models internally, give more flexibility of employment internally, clearer skill development for future skill requirements internally, but also externally equipping 10 million young people with the essential skills of the future to make sure that they can enter workplaces and give them a wider access to job opportunities. And we aim to do that 10 million by, again, 2030. So those are the three main commitments. There are some others within there around supporting SMEs and our retail chain, and also about making our business even more diverse. Internally, we've done a lot of work on gender diversity in the last 5 to 10 years. We're now moving that into these other forms of essential diversity, race, colour, making sure that our boards, for example, and countries represent the consumers that are buying our products. So if we're sitting in Africa, that we have an Africa-dominant board membership, and the same equally across the world in the other countries.
I mean, obviously, you know, for a group like Unilever to try and address these issues, you know, must be a massive challenge.
Yes. Someone was talking about our previous commitments on sustainable living plan, which we set out 10 years ago. And they were reflecting that when they were announced, they were really scary because we didn't know. Most of us in the business, and I've been in the business a long time, some of us didn't even understand the metric that was being talked about. Never mind that the scale of change in that metric we had any appreciation of. And many of us were really scared about, you know, the ambition level we were putting out into the public. But I think what we've learned during that last 10 years is that only if you do set those really stretching ambitions do you make real change, and do you accelerate change, and do you engage other people around you to make those changes. So we certainly don't have all the answers to the ambitions that are laid out, but we have a clear commitment and a clear passion to make the difference and to make things happen that we have set out in the targets. Now, we're also clear, as I mentioned before, that this is going to be done with a multitude of partnerships around us. Very little of it will happen just by Unilever flicking a switch and saying, on living wage, we're going to pay living wage tomorrow, for example. It won't be systemic, it won't be sustainable, it won't make any real difference in much of the value chains if we just did that. It wouldn't go to the right people. So we need to work with partners, with advisory groups, with peer groups, with governments, NGOs, to help get the correct and sustainable roadmaps of change that ensures our business and our connections, but also in an ideal world, even greater than just Unilever's connections, get this difference through. But we've got a lot of seeds of hope. So we do see where you know, we educate farmers, as an example, where we've gone in with government groups and educated farmers around sustainable manufacturing and sustainable agriculture, sorry, that they can increase their yields 2- and 4-fold even. We've done a lot of work in Indonesia with palm farmers over the last 5 years. And you can find that a smallholder farmer who was getting 2 tons per hectare or 2.5 tons per hectare 5 years ago is now getting 5 tons a hectare. Now, because he's getting 5 tons a hectare, he can now proudly send his child to university, which would have been unheard of 5 years ago. So we can see theories of change which allow for systemic change. Now, in some ways, those are the easier ones in some ways, because they're self-propelling, they're self-paid in a sense, because they, you know, the systemic change in itself is giving money, it's giving value to the farmer. It's not about Unilever spending more. And the solutions that we have across the board are going to be varied by company, by sector of spend, and by country. We'll have some of those solutions through to there will be just straight procurement contract changes. For example, in our third-party manufacturing contracts, where we have dedicated new third-party contracts, those will all be on a living wage presumption, even if they're, you know, we know this, that they're only starting in 1, 2, 3 years time. We've already pre-contacted that they will be on a living wage basis. So there'll be a whole suite of solutions in here that get us to that goal.
I see. And obviously there's, you know, there's also, it's quite a holistic drive as well, isn't it? Because in many respects, consumers are looking for these kind of values within the companies and the brands that they choose to shop with too, isn't there?
Definitely. Consumers are looking for it. Investors are looking for it. We see other peer companies already making some similar commitments, and we strongly encourage other peer companies, suppliers, governments, NGOs to help on this journey. But I think we for sure believe the consumer is becoming much more aware. I think we might have talked last year about plastics and climate, and the consumer is very aware of the amount of plastic that's on the goods they're buying, and they're making branded choices about the packaging and the quantity of packaging increasingly in their daily shop.
And also there's also opportunities within this realm too, aren't there? As well as the ethical and the kind of moral standpoint and the sustainable standpoint, there's also massive opportunity.
Well, linked to that consumer pull, we do believe the consumer is getting better educated. They know more what the issue is. They ultimately will demand that on every consumer product, more of this information is available. So when we launched our climate commitments last year, embedded within that was a ask of all of our suppliers to enter the carbon footprint of the products in the invoices they give us, which allows us to put the carbon footprint of the product with the consumer. Now, similarly, at some stage, there'll be a social footprint that the consumer wants to see, that when they pick up their product that they're going to buy, and they can scan a QR code and it will tell them where it came from, what's the carbon footprint, what's the social footprint. Was this farmer, was this person in this chain paid a living wage? And we believe that's right. The consumer is going to demand much more transparency, much more traceability of where products are coming from, and the transparency of was it doing good through that chain.
And I mean, obviously it's an ambitious and a much needed, strategy, if you like. To some degree, the challenges there are obviously obvious on this kind of scale. And also, of course, you've got the a pandemic going on as well, haven't you?
Yes, look, we were similarly keen in the middle of last year, in the middle of the pandemic, that back to the core purpose of our business and how we think our business, the only way of making our business sustainable, where we can continue to source products, continue to source agri products, where people want to be in that industry because they're getting paid a wage. And the middle of last year, when we did our climate and nature commitments, It was actually stimulated by the pandemic that it's even more important now that we commit to change in climate and in social inequality. And the numbers I mentioned to you before, there's 37 million people more going into poverty. There's, I think, the ILO have published 305 million full-time workers have lost their jobs in the last 12 months. So there's just a burning need, a burning platform, if you know what I mean, to make these commitments as a company and start to make a difference as a company. And I think consumers are expecting that. Our consumers deserve that, and they deserve us to be committing behind that. And we're sure that will make a difference in terms of their choices going forward as well. It does layer on top, but it's actually in some ways complementary. So when we look at the sustainability and resilience of our supply chain, the areas of weakness in supply chains is where there's underpaid migrant labor, where there's a workforce that's at the low end of wage rates, and they're hunting around for cash on a daily basis. Where so we believe these things are not competing forces. In all cases, there will be some competing forces, but there's many congruent forces that if, you know, a manufacturing partner of ours can have a living wage, a more consistent workforce, people are dedicated to that company and keen to work in that company, and they trust that company even during a pandemic period, and they go into work in that company, then it creates, you know, a more resilient company, a more resilient supply chain for us. So it does have those pandemic opportunities as well. But we are living in complex times. So finding these strands of congruence are really important. And also within our own business, to ensure that people in our own business are motivated behind the direction of travel that we're going in. Is really important. And we've had resounding positive support from our own staff in terms of how do we help people around us has been a resounding question of the last 12 months.
And obviously, as a chief procurement officer, how does it feel that, you know, procurement and obviously inherently supply chains too are right at the forefront of this change, if you like?
Yeah, look, I'm immensely proud of what the teams have done in the last 12 months. The supply chain teams and procurement teams of many businesses have been front and center in the reaction management, the safety management of our colleagues and our manufacturing colleagues, the resilience of our products, the changing of supply chains. You know, we started in my world, this started on the 27th of January with a call from China, saying that we've got a problem, we think we might have a problem, and we were, you know, moving sourcing that typically was coming from China elsewhere. And then as the pandemic moved across the world, that second new source became a problem. You have a third new source. And while some products are quite easy to change sources from, you know, many of either the unique sources that we have, you know, tea is only grown in some parts of the world. Palm is only grown in some parts of the world. Vanilla is only grown in some parts of the world. There's some core technologies which are actually highly scaled and very expensive that are only sitting in singular parts of the world. So we've been doing that incredible balancing act, and the teams have been doing that. And for all of us, we're both sitting at home, and all these teams are sitting at home doing this in an unphysical connected way. And that's, you know, that's what I think plays at the top of my mind going forward. I've been just super impressed with what the team have actually delivered in terms of resilience and performance and protection of our supply partners through financial aids in the last 12 months. I worry for them because the world of home working is still going to continue. So, you know, well-being of our colleagues, making sure that they have connection with us as a business, and we're caring for them, is going to be essential in the even in the next 9 to 12 months.
And also, how important is it to, if you like, align a procurement strategy with the overall kind of business strategy, if you like?
Yeah, fundamental. There is no, in my mind, there's no, at the first level, there's no functional strategies. We have one business strategy that we all have to align and support and do in the most competitive way. So most of the time, I was sitting earlier with our global buyer of packaging for deodorants, aluminium cans and triggers and things. And the starting point of that discussion is, what's the business strategy? So where's the business going in growth and location, in format and complexity, and in financial management, in innovation? What's the business strategy? And then we can start to hone, well, what's the winning procurement strategy? How are we going to deliver to that business a winning strategy versus competition? How do we do that better than everybody else? How do we do our purpose-led version of that? that is value driven and is engaged through our supply base to deliver a better winning strategy than our competition for our marketplaces to be able to win. But absolutely, to your point, it absolutely starts with that business strategy. And many times, the business strategy, in some cases, actually led from the material strategy. So if you take a tea business where a tea and the inherent sourcing of tea is so fundamental to the product, the brand, the commerce, the availability, that there is no difference between the business strategy and the tea strategy because they're inextricably linked, if you know what I mean. So certainly it's where I always start when I do a review of a portfolio within procurement, is we start with understanding the business strategy first.
So, I mean, to kind of wrap it up, very exciting times at uni.
Yeah, look, it's really exciting, to be honest. It's a little bit scary, and I think we've become comfortable with it should be scary. If it's not scary, it's probably not going to have the impact that's really relevant. It might not. So it's good to be scary. We're confident. We're more and more confident with those scary targets. But at the end of the day, you know, to be in procurement where you can make this difference, where you can have an impact on the climate, on the nature, on the regeneration of nature, on the social agenda, on what we pay and where we pay it, and that's sustainable for all of our partners, is unique and a beautiful, fantastic place to be in business right now.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for that today, Dave. We really appreciate that.
No problem, Andrew. You stay safe. My regards to everyone in Norwich, a place I know very well.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Yeah, hopefully. Well,
thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. Have a lovely day, or what's left of it.
Thank you very much. Yeah, and you. Thank you. Cheers.
Thank you for listening to the Digital Insight podcast in association with the interface.net and cpostrategy.com. The Digital Insight is brought to you by B2E Media Limited. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Please remember to subscribe, rate and review. And don't forget to check out our podcast archive at www.b2e-media.com/the Digital Insight.